It's time now for the Roger Hurricane Wilson podcast in conjunction with that Georgia Rhythm podcast. Sit back and listen and enjoy.
All right, everybody, this is Roger Hurricane Wilson, and we are talking with Barry Borden, BB, legendary drummer of Atlanta, around with a lot of bands, Mother's Finest, Molly Hatchet, Marshall Tucker, The Outlaws, just a really long career, and I know he and I had bumped into each other on some gigs here and there over the years. This is all about that Georgia rhythm and the history going back to Studio One, and talking about a lot of stuff that went on in Atlanta music-wise in the 70s. So, yeah, Barry.
Legendary is another word for old, right?
Well, we've been both around a long time for sure.
Okay, now you're too nice. You're too kind.
Well, give me a little bit of your view of the music scene in Atlanta back in the 70s. You know, what was it like for you?
It's hard not to romanticize it, because the 70s was just magic back then. There was clubs everywhere. There was a million clubs. There was a million bands, and you would play a club in the north side, play a club in the south side, east side, whatever. So as you're playing all these clubs, you get to meet all the other musicians, which was very cool. A lot of the clubs would have more than one band play there for an entire week. So you get to meet a lot of people. I moved here from Chattanooga. I moved here, I think, 73, maybe early 74. Had me a gig with a band called Cisco. And Cisco, we just played the club, started with the Stone Pony. There was Hot Lanta. There was Alice Cooley's. There was Richards. I'm sure there's other places I don't remember, but those are like the main ones. It was magic. It really was. There were so many good bands. Everybody was young and hungry, you know, and the Allman Brothers had made it big, and that was such a cool thing. That kind of brought Georgia into the microscope of the world. Like, wow, maybe these guys got something going on down there. What's going on? So that added to the, I don't know, the electricity that was in the air of Georgia back then. I mean, it was really cool. It was very, very cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of magic around, I thought. I mean, and the whole thing, the whole scenario, the whole culture was around music itself, you know, live music. A lot of the great bands that are, you know, classic rock bands now, I mean, these people were coming through on a daily basis. You mentioned the great ones like Richards and Electric Ballroom and the Agora Ballroom and all that, and then you had Finocchio's and Hot Lanta and all these other places that were just showing off music, and it was all about rocking, playing guitar and playing drums and playing bass and making music and writing songs. And you're exactly right. So I recall exactly what you're saying.
Sadly, I moved here the day they closed Finocchio's. I went into Finocchio's one time, doing an audition for Steve Cole's agency. Steve Cole was a big deal back in the 70s, a Discovery agency.
Discovery Incorporated, I remember.
But yeah, and he had all the bands that were playing all the different rock and roll clubs around the Southeast. And so he was kind of a big deal. And so I remember my band from Chattanooga auditioned for Steve Cole at Finocchio. So that's my only connection to them. And when we walked in, I asked the Steve Cole guy, I said, whose equipment is that over there on the stage? He said, that's some Leonard Skinner. He said, yeah, they play the clubs around here a whole lot. I thought, oh, that's cool. I think I've heard of them.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's the way it was. I remember there were a lot of bands like, well, Leonard Skinner, Eric Quincy Tate, Hydra, the Youngins, all these guys were playing, you know, around. And then later on, let's see.
Never got to see the Youngins. I heard about them. They were supposed to be bad, but I never got to see them.
Yeah, the big summer that I remember where music was in the park big time was 1970. And so I remember that was just, it was wide open. The old strip was going on and that whole kind of thing. And it was just it was definitely a magical time. And the thing about it was all about music. And I always love talking to guys like you. And you know, I've been around a while to talk to a lot of them. And I remember, you know, what was going on. And so it was definitely.
I'm glad I lived to tell the tale. Because a lot of people I know didn't.
And that too.
Gone for whatever reasons, you know.
No doubt. Well, what was your, you know, we're talking about that Georgia rhythm. What was your opinion of Buddy Bowie as a songwriter? What did you think about Buddy?
I thought he was fantastic. I thought absolutely fantastic. I never met the guy, but I thought he was fantastic. All that stuff that the rhythm section did, you know, it just blew me away. A lot of friends of mine in Chattanooga had bought all the Atlanta rhythm section records. And so, you know, they were legends. It's like, wow, they're the guys that really own this city. You know, the Allman Brothers owned Macon, but Atlanta Rhythm Section owned Atlanta.
Well, they were an evolution of basically early on from Bill Lowry and Lowry Music. Yeah. Then with the early 60s hits, you know, with Tommy Rowe and Billy Joe Royal and all those guys and the Classics Four, and then the guys in Atlanta Rhythm Section.
I used to live right down the street from the Lowry Studios.
And then they were basically the Rhythm Section. They were the Classics Four, you know, with those hits, Spooky, Stormy, Traces of Love. And then they became the Atlanta Rhythm Section. So
that's magical stuff, boy.
Great stuff. I was told you had a little story about being on the road. Maybe I think you got left behind one time. I heard about that. We want to hear the fun stories here.
Well, yeah, I mean it's kind of stupid, but it's a little bit more normal than most people would think. When you go out on tours, you know, 99% of bands, they don't own their bus. They're just leasing the buses, and you lease the driver with the bus. And you didn't have the same bus all the time when you would go out, you know, in April, and then you go out in June, you'd have a different bus and you'd have a different driver. But there's some guidelines that you have to follow when you're traveling around on a bus. You know, number one, you can number one on the bus in the bathroom, but you know, you can't go number two.
That's the rule. That's the rule I've always heard.
Yes, you gotta do. You can't do the number two. Everything else you can do on the bus is just fine. Excuse me, I got pollen in my lungs. I was just outside, you know, all that yard work. I got tons of pollen in my lungs, so bear with me. So yeah, anyway, I was still somewhat young to the travel on the bus kind of thing, and we pulled over at a rest area, and the driver went in to, I don't know, get a smoke or something, a snack, to tie some coffee to tide him over, you know, for the rest of the trip. And I got off the bus because I had to go to my bathroom, and I didn't think about it, but I didn't tell the guy, and everybody else in the band was asleep. So anyway, I came back and the bus is gone, and all I could think was, I am just so screwed, because I was in almost bed clothes, almost. But luckily, I had grabbed my wallet. I don't know why I did, because I wasn't going to buy anything inside the rest of it, but I grabbed my wallet anyway. I was screwed. And so the only thing I could think of to do, I kind of sat there for a minute. I'm just, you know, what can I do? And I thought, well, I guess I'll walk to an airport. And that way I can call the band's manager. I'm sorry. Also, we were in Pompano Beach, Florida when this happened. On our way back to Atlanta, we had done some gigs down in Florida. I believe we were playing a bunch of gigs with Santana at the time. Mother Sinus played a bunch of gigs with Santana. Anyway, so I'll be okay. I walked to an airport, and I asked the guy at the service station. I said, "Where's the closest big airport?" He said, "Well, I did Fort Lauderdale." And I said, "How far is that?" He said, "Oh, it's, you know, it's a few miles," because he saw that I was walking. I'm like, "Crap!" So anyway, what could I do? I got out on the freeway and I walked, and it was, maybe 25 or 30 miles, something like that. I had no choice. So in the hot Florida sun, I'm walking on the freeway from Pompano Beach to Fort Lauderdale Airport, and I caught a, you know, like I said, luckily I had brought my wallet with me, and I looked like I just looked like death on a cracker when I came into that airport. But anyway,
it sounds like you did the right thing, because I knew another musician that was on a bus with, I'm not going to say who it was, but he was touring with a place, and he stopped at a truck stop, did the same thing, went in there, except he did not take his wallet with him, And but some and it was about 50 miles away, and somehow he was able to get back home and make it back. So yeah, I've heard about a few of these adventures, but you know, it's always fun to hear about them now.
It's not hard to do because the driver didn't know I got off, you know, and he was a newer driver, so he didn't know me from Adam's house cat, really, you know. So anyway, but I got back, and it was, you know, kind of an adventure, and I was very sunburned, and my legs were really, really sore for about a week, but I got over it. It was an adventure.
Well, like you said, a lot of those years, a lot of the adventures we did, you know, we made it through, and it's a really good thing. Right now, we're going to take a quick break, about a 60-second break in the podcast. I'm Roger Hurricane Wilson. This is the my podcast, in conjunction with That Georgia Rhythm. We're talking to Barry Borden, former drummer of Mother's Finest, Molly Hatchet, Marshall Tucker Band, The Outlaws. Man, I mean, I'll tell you what a career. Anyway, we're going to...
I can't hold a gig down to save my life, can I?
I think you did pretty good, man. All right, so we'll take a short break here. We're going to come right back with more of Barry Borden right here on Roger Hurricane Wilson's podcast in conjunction with That Georgia Rhythm. Okay, we're back here. I'm Roger Hurricane Wilson on the podcast in conjunction with That Georgia Rhythm, the upcoming film, and this is the That Georgia Rhythm podcast. We're talking to Barry Borden, BB, former drummer of Mother's Finest, Molly Hatchet, Marshall Tucker Band, The Outlaws. Boy's been around, let me tell you, and got some great stories here.
I can't keep a gig. I can't hold down a gig, I guess, whatever. Anyway. But they keep hiring me back, so that's right. That's how I've stayed around for a long time. You know what? I let you know something a lot of people don't know, and it just popped in my head when you were talking about the ARS guys. They asked me to come play with them after I had left Mother's.
That's not too shabby.
Paul Goddard called me, said, come play with us. And I said, Paul, I am not even you guys' caliber. I said, forget about it. I'm not your caliber, you know. I said I'm a basher. I said I'm not your guy. I said I saw you guys at the second Champagne Jam, and you flat out floored me. And I said no, I'm not even in your league. He's oh no man, you can do no. Come on, man. I said no, Paul, believe me, I'm not in your league. I said I am so honored that you asked, but yeah, I'm not in your league. Well, I had to decline.
Well, that's a great story, but it's a, you know, real compliment when something like that happens. Let me ask you this though. Tell me what it was like, you know, performing with Mother's Finest, and who do you remember opening for, and you know, what were some of the situations, highlights that stick out to you that we could hear about?
And what was so cool about Mother's, when we came out, the industry was red hot on us. They just loved us to death. All the really, really big wig people loved us to death. And we immediately went out with all these really, really big tours. When we first came out, that first record came out in 76. So you have to think back about who was big in 76. And we went out with the first tour was with Robin Trower. He was huge at that time. And then a couple of months later, they said, oh, by the way, you're going to go on tour with The Who. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? Yeah, you're going to go on tour with The Who. And we did. And we went out with The Who. Nicest guys in the world. Down to earth. Just the most regular people you'd ever want to meet. And, of course, they're playing all these anthems. And, you know, you want to cry listening to their music because it's just so cool, you know. And it was with Keith Moon. I believe it was the last American Dates that Keith Moon played with the band before he passed. We played Peter Frampton and Gary Wright gigs. We played, God, kids, there had to be a gazillion people down in Florida.
There was one time I remember back when I first came back to Atlanta in 1973, in radio and playing gigs and teaching guitar lessons, mm-hmm. and doing the whole thing. You guys were playing at Richards on a Wednesday night, and I remember going over there because I was going from club to club while I was working for 88.5, and so I remember it was a Wednesday.
You worked for 88.5?
Oh yeah, I did that for years.
I still have stickers. That was the best radio station in the world.
Well, that was everything before everything got consulted and corporate and all that. It was college radio at its best, where yes. You know, rock and roll was the whole.
I loved RAS. Yeah. Oh my God, that's so cool.
Well, you guys were. It was a Wednesday night, and you guys came in, and I don't think there was anybody. I think I was there for the sound check. And then you guys played, and there was a few people there the rest of the night. And this was in summer of 1973, I believe it was.
Now, are you talking about Mother's Finest?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, now I wasn't with him in 73. I got with him in like middle of 75.
Okay.
Or early 75.
Okay, well, I remember
I never played Richards with him.
Oh, okay, well, I remember being down there and hearing the band then. They were good, of course. But then I do remember, I remember hanging out. I was with the guys with ARS, and we were hanging out. I was with them for the Champagne Jam, and I remember you guys mm-hmm. playing. I remember standing by the side of the stage and watching you play and everybody else, and it was just a killer show, man. You guys rocked the whole thing, and always have every time I've ever seen you.
Oh, that was just, God, those Champagne Jams were so cool, so cool. God bless Alex Cooley. And it was perfect to have the Atlanta Rhythm Section top it off. They were good. The first year, Atlanta Rhythm Section was good. The second Champagne Jam, Atlanta Rhythm Section was just unfrigging believable.
Yeah, they were.
I'll be totally honest. I was never a huge fan because they weren't my kind of music. They were kind of soft. And I like aggressive. I like, you know, Humble Pie and the Who and the Zeppelin, people like that, you know. But that second year that ARS played this Champagne Jam, it was just like, damn.
Yeah, well, they came in. I mean,
unbelievable.
They were studio musicians and were great and everything. But other than that, they could come out with some really, really high energy stuff and did. I mean, I never saw a bad night. And I was up with those guys hanging around a lot.
Sure, that really sold me on them.
No doubt. What's some of their adventures like? You were with Molly Hatchet, so what was that like?
They just, you know, loud rock and roll.
Yeah, man.
almost a continuation of Mothers, because we would go out with these tours with different people. We'd tour with, we toured with Sammy Hagar a lot. We toured with Blackfoot a lot. But you know what? When you were talking about, I gotta go back to this. When I was with Mother's Finest, they loved us so much. They put us out with everybody that was doing a big tour. We went out with, if you can believe this, Black Sabbath.
Wow.
We did quite a few Black Sabbath days. Ted Nugent. Again, Ted Nugent was huge in those years. We went out with Brian Ferry.
Oh, man.
I mean, that's, but you know, hey, talking about, you know, somebody that's got a hardcore audience and sold out every night was Brian Ferry. Went out with him, and it just I do remember about 77 we had this god bunch of little ruffian punks open up for us. They had tattoos and everything, and I thought, oh my god, and it that was ACDC opened up for us in Johnson City, Tennessee. First time we ever saw ACDC, they opened for us.
Wow.
That was wacky.
That was a lot of great stories here, man. Did you ever visit? Did you ever do any work at Studio One? Because we
sure did. We did the Mother Factor record, kind of the funkier Mother Factor record. We did that there with Rodney. That was for us, it wasn't so great. But it just there was that every studio has a vibe to it. And that studio has such a Lynyrd Skynyrd Atlanta Rhythm Section vibe. And it just wasn't our vibe, so the record didn't come out so great. It's a good studio, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't, it was not real comfortable for us. for some reason. And it was just the vibe of the studio. And the producer and his engineer were not liking it either. Nothing wrong with the studio again. But it was just that they were L.A., San Francisco guys, and it was not cosmopolitan enough for them.
Well, this one, you're right about that, though, because I had the pleasure of being able to hang out with Rodney Mills and Barry Bailey and those guys. I was just a kid, basically, and they embraced me, and they could have just told me to go away, but they let me come in and listen while they were recording, and got to be friends with Buddy and all the rest of the band, and it did have a certain vibe about it, you know, and they were able to work on their own terms the way they wanted to, and it's an amazing, you know, amazing thing that I was around to, visualize that, and that they let me do that at the same time.
Yeah, somebody in the band had gotten really, really sick, too, at that time. I don't remember if it was Michael, the keyboard player, or Joyce, or Glenn, the singer. Somebody had gotten sick, and so just that whole time that we did that record there was just rough for us. It was just a bad time. Not necessarily really the studio. The studio vibe was strange for us, it was just a weird time for the band, all together for some reason. That's, just like baseball players have, batting streaks. They bat good, and they bat bad, and they just have a losing streak. We had kind of a losing streak month there when we made that record. That's a good explanation. I don't know.
Well, there's a lot of ups and downs in this business, kind of like a roller coaster.
That's true. We had done the first record in Miami. That was very cool. We did a second record at the Sound Pit, and that was the studio that really, really clicked for us, was the Sound Pit.
Yeah, that was the one. That was the one down there. Was GRC Records. It was right off of Techwood Drive in Atlanta. It was a wonderful studio. I did a few sessions there.
Yes, sir. I believe it's a parking lot now. It's just sad. It was owned by Mike Phoebus, that pornography king guy. They was a great studio. Had phenomenal people working there.
Yeah, sure did. What about you also did a little bit of time with the Marshall Tucker Band with Doug and those guys. How was that?
Mm-hmm. That was great. It was fantastic. I had been with the Outlaws for 10 years, and we did just a bajillion gigs together with Marshall Tucker. And I kept kind of ribbing Doug every now and then and say, hey, man, if you ever need, like a real drummer, give me a call. Yeah, I'm kind of a jerk, but, hey, that's how you stay employed. Sometimes you got to kind of, drop your name sometimes. Anyway, there came a time when they said, hey, come on, jump on board, grab your stuff. And I did. I was there for almost 28 years. That's a while. I was with the Outlaws for 10.
I do recall you being with the Outlaws. I know that you're the Outlaws and my band, we did a show together. I did an opener for you guys. I think it was somewhere in North Atlanta a while. It was back in the early 90s or something like that. But anyway, it was... Yeah. It was a lot of fun, man. I always liked Huey and all the guys, in the band. I mean, I had to listen to them for a long time, and so it was an amazing thing.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We just couldn't get anywhere. That was the only thing I hated about that band. We just could not get anywhere. So I left because I felt like I was beating my head against the wall.
Yeah.
And I loved Huey. I love, and Chris Hicks, who now plays with Marshall Tucker.
Yeah.
He was, he was in the band there, and a great band, but just we couldn't get anywhere, and I had to come home. I was getting road burned.
I know what you mean.
About a year after I left the Outlaws, Doug called me up and said, hey, you want to come back out on the road? I said, I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right.
Like I said, I was there for 28 years.
We're going to take a really short break here real quick. This is Roger Hurricane Wilson's podcast. That's me, along with being in conjunction with the That Georgia Rhythm podcast, along with the upcoming film. We're speaking with Barry Borden, formerly of Mother's Finest, the Outlaws, Molly Hatchet, and Marshall Tucker Band, a great drummer. We had some interaction over the years with a lot of fun back in the times we're talking about. Going to take a short break, about 60 seconds, come right back, and we'll do one more little segment. We'll talk about whatever comes up.
We shall.
Yeah, welcome back, everybody. Roger Hurricane Wilson on the Roger Hurricane Wilson podcast, and in conjunction with That Georgia Rhythm, I'm speaking with Barry Borden here, BB, former drummer of Mother's Finest, Molly Hatchet, Marshall Tucker Band, The Outlaws. We're just kind of telling some stories, and Barry, you said you originally came from Chattanooga, made it to Atlanta, jumped in on the cool Atlanta scene in the 70s, had a, sounds like a stellar career, you know, bouncing around with a lot of great musicians and doing the thing. It's got to be feel good to look back on it, and you know, and like you said earlier, the fact that we all survived it is cool.
You are correct, sir. Yeah, I played my first couple of bands up in Chattanooga, and we came down here and played at the different clubs. We played Hotlanta, which was right behind Alex Cooley's Electric Ballroom. And I think one or two of the Stone Ponies we would play. And so I got a little bit of a foot in the door with some Atlanta people, and I got to make the move with that band, Cisco. I think it was around 74, maybe the late 73. I finally got to make the move down there. And started on the big Steve Cole Discovery Agency club scene and played. Oh my God, Roger. We would play 300 nights a year, and I'm not joking, because the Atlanta and the whole Southeast was just filthy with rock and roll clubs. That was the 70s, and Steve Cole was very plugged in.
Well, Steve Cole, I remember he was, you know, there was the Great Speckled Bird, which was the underground magazine he advertised in. All the bands were always listed in that magazine. But then you mentioned some other clubs too. There was clubs around the perimeter. You know, there were like the Stone Ponies. There was, I think there were four at one time. I think there was an East, West, North, and South. You know, Stone Pony.
You
are correct, sir. C.W. Shaw's. Yeah, no, I was C.W. I love C.W. Man, I got to be good friends with him. I played there a few times. It was just a wonderful place. It was one of those places you could go late night, and you never knew who was going to stop in. You know,
and speaking of late night, what was the place that was on Stewart Avenue? Oh my God.
The Crystal Palace was one place down there.
It was up the street from the Crystal Palace.
It's on the tip of my tongue also. I remember going in there.
Yeah, it was the seediest place in Atlanta, but you know, it stayed open late, and it was rocking, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning. I can't remember the name, but yeah, it was down the street from the Crystal Palace, yes. Roger, we had it too good. We were spoiled. Alex Cooley spoiled us. With you know, good and great music, all the great bands that he brought into Atlanta,
and then you had the great venues. The old Municipal Auditorium was running some great shows, and of course then you know, the Fox Theater, and then Alex Cooley was running. Then he moved the theater to Buckhead, and then had that for a while. So it was just an amazing time. I mean, we talk about it.
Beck, Bogart, and Appice at the Municipal Auditorium. The only show I went to today, I saw Beck, Bogart, and Appice. Damn. Point of band. I don't think a lot of people remember that band.
Oh yeah. Nope. And that was kind of like leftovers of Cactus, and of course, and then Jeff Beck. What else can you say about that? You know,
yeah, they were supposed to be the new super group. It didn't last very long, but that was cool. That was cool.
And
oh
then,
my God!
Then I remember seeing like Leslie West and Mountain were big. They were doing some big shows. Then later on, when they broke up, you know, Leslie West was coming back and playing different places like Alex Cooley's Ballroom.
Oh my God, we did tons of shows with Leslie West and Mountain. Boy, I've got a story for you. Now, Wallace used to play a billion shows with Leslie West and Mountain. So, what is one of the main things that you remember about Mountain's music? Why did the drummer always play in all the big hit songs?
Corky Laing.
Yes.
I caught one. I caught one of his sticks one time. He was always throwing sticks out one after another too.
Always throwing sticks. Cowbell.
Exactly.
It seemed like the cowbell was in all the big songs, and Corky Laing just used the heck out of it. You know. Anyway, we're playing a Friday way out of this big motorcycle festival up in the mountains of California years ago. So it's Outlaws, it's Mountain. Oh, it's as cool as it can be. Bam, Corky Laing doesn't have a cowbell. So it's like, oh my God, the world has come to an end. So it just so happens, I said, Corky, I said, I've got a, I've got a, I've got an answer to your dilemma here. I can make one of these drums into a cowbell for you. So when you hit this drum, that I'll sit next to you on your drum set, it will be a cowbell. And he gave me a look like, what in the hell are you talking about? So I went through the little machine. So anyway, I did that. I set up the machine so it would be a cowbell sound on this certain drum. So Corky Lane turns around, before he's going, you know, he's checking out his drums. He hits that drum, bonk, it's a cowbell. He just like, damn. Maybe it was 1992, something like that.
Okay.
But yeah, you can, you know, you can set up a drum to sound like anything. So I saved Corky Lane's butt that night by turning my tom into a cowbell for him.
No, that's that's a riot.
He just thought that was the funniest thing in the world. I said, okay, Corky, just hit the rim. Don't have to hit it so hard. Just hit the rim. Bam, you got a cowbell. So saved his butt. Yeah, and I knew Leslie very well. And his bass player was a super good friend of mine. So I still talk to the bass player every now and then. Of course, Leslie's passed, but his bass player, I still talk to him every now and then. Richie Scarlett, great guy.
Yeah, you know, I remember, I got some photos. Well, when I was in high school, I was a big Mountain fan, Leslie West. I was always copping a lot of his stuff, and just always loved his vibratos that he used on his guitar, and loved his sound. And I got to meet him later on at a NAMM show, like back in 1978. And he was talking about he was old school, you know, like right about that time. But 78 on into 80, 81, 82 is when the technology was starting to change now, and MIDI was starting to come in. And I remember I met Leslie West at it was a conference room of like a demonstration of some guitars or something like that, and he happened to be there. And I told him how big a fan I was, and then he goes to me, he says, oh, you know, DiMarzio, whatever, you know. He says, I remember when it was Gibson Fender, we plug it in, you know. He was just hilarious, and it was just a riot. But he was old school, and I still loved listening to his stuff. And I had some great photos of him from high school, and I sent them to him. And his wife gave them to him a couple of years before he passed away.
Oh my gosh, cool. Leslie was hardcore, boy. But you know something else? Going back to my career, here's another funny little play. So who was the bass player for Mountain?
Felix Papillari, producer.
The phenomenal producer who almost produced the third Mother's Finest record. And we were in the studio with him for a couple of weeks, and there was no chemistry there. That's why I didn't work out with Felix Papillari. But him doing all that Cream stuff, I remember all that Cream stuff. I was a huge Cream.
Yeah, fan. I mean, he was instrumental in producing all that, for sure.
Yes. Oh, my God. He never got any work done because I was too busy asking questions about Cream songs.
Well, anyway, I'm going to tell you what, we've just about to wrap it up here. I'm Roger Hurricane Wilson, doing the Roger Hurricane Wilson podcast in conjunction with That Georgia Rhythms podcast, representing the upcoming movie called of the same name, That Georgia Rhythm. Been talking here with Barry Borden, BB, legendary drummer around Atlanta from Chattanooga originally, played with Mother's Finest, Molly Hatchet, Marshall Tucker Band, The Outlaws. And, man, I'll tell you what, we could probably go on about the stories, but we talked about the 70s in Atlanta, the way the music was, Studio One, you know, Buddy Bowie, the Classics Four, Atlanta Rhythm Section, the history of Atlanta, because the heritage of music in Atlanta is extensive, and a lot of it comes out of Studio One, and that's kind of what we're kind of revolving back to, but we want to hear everything aside from that, too. So I do appreciate you being here with me, man, and you know, sharing your stories and everything else, and hopefully we can do it again.
Yeah, my pleasure, Roger. Absolutely my pleasure. I'm going to have to come out and see you too, bud, because I haven't seen you in like 100 years.
Well, we'll do that.
I'm you up online.
I got your number here, and I'll text you a little bit later on, and we'll get together.
There you go. It's a date.
Yeah, got it, buddy. Thank you. Thanks for being here.
You've been listening to the Roger Hurricane Wilson podcast, along with That Georgia Rhythm podcast. You've got a guest you would like to hear? Give us a call at the podcast hotline at 706-409-5603. That's 706-409-5603. And we'll see you next time on the Roger Hurricane Wilson podcast.